Hello and welcome. Thank you for tuning in today. Today, at the start of this episode, we're going to have a disclaimer. As we journey through this season of the Resilient Masculinity podcast, focusing this third season on making marriage great again, we will be covering, as in this episode, certain parts of marriage that may not be appropriate for all audiences. Today, we will be talking about the goodness of the marriage bed. And while I'll do my best to keep it PG to PG-13, I want to be upfront and give you the time to either pause this episode so you can continue it without little ears around, or to get headphones or some other noise-reducing device so that you can listen without little innocent ears hearing certain things. So there'll be a few second delay here, and then we'll begin today's episode. All right, seeing that I've probably given you enough time to do so, welcome to the season 3, episode 3 of the Resilient Masculinity podcast. This episode in our season of Making Marriage Great Again is on the goodness of sex. Sex within and for marriage. Drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. Should your springs overflow in the streets, and your streams of water in the public squares, let them be yours alone, never to be shared with strangers. May your fountain be blessed, and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth. A loving doe, a graceful deer, may her breasts satisfy you always. May you always be intoxicated with her love. Why, my son, be intoxicated with another man's wife? Why embrace the bosom of a wayward woman? For your ways are in full view of the Lord, and he examines all your paths. Proverbs 5, 15 through 21, New International Version. So again, welcome. As you heard from that opening and the disclaimer, you already know what the topic of today's episode is. So let's just dive into it. Where do we even get this idea of the goodness of sex? And in a world full, in a society full of sexual marketing and promiscuity and OnlyFans and all the other outlets out there that promote godless, covenantless sex, why do we think it's good? Why should it be good? So first and foremost, we see that God created it, and we see that in Genesis. We see that God commands Adam and Eve to be fruitful, to multiply, and to fill the earth. That's known as the dominion mandate. We see that in scripture. We have Proverbs that talk about being satisfied with the wife of your youth. We have a whole book of the Bible, Song of Solomon, that is a rather cheek blushing, book, at least for some people. So, and then we get the idea that a man and a woman joining together, the two becoming one flesh. We see that in Genesis. We see it echoed by Jesus in, I believe, Luke? Or it might have been Matthew. Either one. Anyway, we see it. Jesus echo it, and then we also see Paul echo it in Ephesians. So we see that God created it. And what is it for? Well, in part, all productivity is going to come from the intimate relationship of the husband and wife. They come together to make life, fruit, and all other things that could not happen without that relation. And we're not just talking about sex, but that is at the center of the productive Christian marriage. And that is, in part, what we're gearing our marriage towards. A reflection of God and his relationship with the church. Not only is there love and grace and mercy. And yes and amen to that, by the way. Like, full on love, grace, and mercy, amen. But there's also fruitfulness. There's good productive work that is to be done. And it can only come through the intimate relation in the marriage. The topic of sex has not had a lot of coverage from the theologically centered, biblically grounded Christian circles lately. In fact, there's a lack of body literacy. If you're like me, some of us grew up in the 90s and 2000s, early 2000s. You had the purity culture, right? Josh Harris's I Kiss Dating Goodbye book. You had purity rings, and you had almost an aversion to sex growing up. I think what happened was there was a pendulum swing. Obviously, you know, starting in the 1960s, we had the sexual revolution. We had contraception being quite prevalent. That's when that started, right? And then we had a generation that was all about free love, and, you know, the hippie movement kind of kicked that. And I think the Christian church in the 90s, and I don't think necessarily wrong to do so, I don't think it was wrong to do so, they sought to protect their children from the onslaught of sexual perversion that they saw coming down the pipeline. And they did so, but I don't think all the messaging may have been correct, or at least maybe the framing of it. And, you know, this is not an indictment against my parents. This is not an indictment against any one particular person or group. Just some observations as I've grown older. A lot of the teaching was geared towards how bad sex was. And that's not actually true. God made it to be beautiful. God made it to be good. In fact, He created it. And we know that all things God created are good. So, I think what the messaging should have geared more towards was, hey, young men, hey, young women, this is good, but you're not there yet. You know, hey, you're 13. Guess what? We get hormones are raging. Guess what? God made this, and He made it for good things, but that's to be shared with your wife only. And women, that's to be shared with your husbands only. And it's a sacred thing, it's a holy thing, and we want to protect that until you enter that marriage relationship. And then, go forth, have fun, enjoy, have kids, baptize them, grow the kingdom of God, and be productive Christian. Households have productive Christian marriages. I think that would have been a better way to go about it. And we've lost this body literacy, especially, you know, I'm not a woman, I'm not a girl, but throughout the course of history, a lot of the things that the women learned, they learned from their moms and their grandmas and their great-grandmas and the generations before them. They taught what it was to be in sync with their body and to understand it better. Obviously, before birth control, before modern day contraception, you had to know your body pretty well. And nowadays we'll stick 14-year-olds on birth control just because that's what the doctor says. And we mess with hormones and we put kids on puberty blockers and we wonder why we struggle with fertility in our 20s and 30s, and we wonder why the birth rate plummets, and we wonder why there might be judgment. God might actually be judging America because of our sexual waywardness. I'll let that sink in for a minute. Now, I'm not saying it's 100%, you know, correlation,
And, similarities don't necessarily mean causation, right? Just because it's similar, or just because things happen to line up that way, doesn't mean it's the reason it is, but it does give you something to think about. So, but there are duties of a husband and wife in the marriage bed, and that doesn't get talked about either. I made a post a few weeks ago, probably about a month ago, at the time of the releasing of this recording, and it was just a post on our Facebook page that said, "Husbands, your bodies do not belong to you, they belong to your wife, and wives, your body does not belong to you, but it belongs to your husband." And that's a scripturally based, that is scripturally based. In fact, I'll see if I can pull it up. Let's see, that is 1 Corinthians 7, verse 4. "For the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does." And the comments on that were quite telling, even from fellow Christians, and even when I shared that it was a biblically based post, people still got upset. So, what are the duties of a husband and a wife in the bedroom? What are their duties towards God? And what are their duties towards each other? So, some questions to ask is, what is the proper way to use this gift from God? What is it for? And what is the right use of it? Right? Again, we talked about how sex is a gift from God, and that can be found in Genesis 1, 26 through 27. Oh, my notes just blurbed out on me. Sex was God's idea, and it wasn't a product from the fall. So, what goes wrong, and what else goes wrong when we use it incorrectly? Or when we don't follow our duties as husbands in the marriage bed. And this could be by looking at pornography. This could be by entertaining lustful thoughts about other women. This could be denying your wife access to the bedroom. This could be you denying your wife children, even. Did you know that your wife has authority to want children, and you have a duty to her to love her as Christ loved the church sacrificially and gave himself for her? Did you know that children are a gift from God and a blessing and a heritage? Did you know that it can be wrong to deny your wife what is due her? And likewise, it is wrong for your wife to deny you the same thing, assuming, obviously, this is barring any health issues. Obviously, that's a completely different side of the coin. That's obviously we're talking about other stuff here, okay? So when that happens, there's shame. There's no more freedom for a wife to be sexually hospitable for her husband. Here's something, and as someone who my wife and I have struggled with infertility for almost 4 years, so it's not a, I don't say this lightly, okay, and I'm not necessarily saying this is what is the reason, but something that through my studies and through talking with other people, I would almost wonder for some people who maybe they're struggling to get pregnant, is there unconfessed sin in that relationship? Does the husband have a secret porn addiction? Is the wife not sexually hospitable to her husband? We know that unconfessed sin can hinder our prayer lives. So why wouldn't God close the womb temporarily as a judgment on that marriage? And of course, I'm not saying all cases of infertility and barrenness are from that. Clearly, it is something to think about. For those who are trying to get pregnant, honestly, be honest. How often are you having sex? How many times are you having sex? Are you having sex once a month? Because that's probably not going to do it. Just being honest, okay? If the husband and wife fail to come together regularly, the household will not be structurally sound. Who sets the thermostat in the house? The husband or the wife? Sexually. Who sets the thermostat of the house? And you can tell, and I've seen it, probably too much information, but I've seen it in my marriage, and I've seen it in other people's marriages. You can tell when a husband and wife have not been together recently or often, because it overflows into other areas. The frustration and the stress and the disconnect, right? God made this gift something that we can connect to each other with. In fact, it's the most intimate form of connection, right? And that's one of the reasons God protected it and made it sacred and made it for marriage only. But you can tell when it's not happened, because it's just like a night and day difference between a couple who's all lovey-dovey on each other, and even not in a sexual way, but just in a warm, hospitable way, and a couple who just nags at each other. You can tell that there's tension. You can tell that there's stress. You can tell that there's frustration because they haven't come together, and there's a disconnect. And I'm sure in your marriage, you can see that too. Sex is so potent that we've seen whole nations be destroyed because of the misuse of sex. It's in the way that a rock makes ripples, so does the misuse of sex. The misuse of sex causes fatherlessness, criminality goes up, achievements in schools go down, achievements in the workplace go down. Our culture worships sex in America, and it misuses it, and therefore it doesn't even know what it's for. I had a post, probably at the time of this recording, at the publishing of this recording, it will be this past week, within the last 7 days. So if you're on our Facebook page, you can look it up. I had a post, and it was a post about how it was a Bible quote about how the man's days are like grass and life is short, and that children are a blessing and your grandchildren are a blessing. And someone asked me, why are you so obsessed with sex? And I had to laugh, because I don't necessarily think I'm obsessed with it. That's a question to ask my wife. But in my posting, I'm not obsessed with it. However, what they are seeing is possibly for the first time, holding marriage and holding the marriage bed sacred. Showing, not in an explicit way, but just through the use of images that show a husband and a wife and children enjoying life and having fun and worshiping God together and growing together, they are now seeing, possibly for the first time, the right use of sex, the proper way that God designed it for. Sex works properly when it's inside the boundaries, the good walls, they gotta set up over the cliff edges. And so many people in our culture fail to see that because they've been taught the wrong use of sex. They've been taught the misuse of it. We're so awash in sexual sin, and yet we don't even know what it's for as a culture. So with that, what are some duties of the husband and the wife? Wives, I'm going to talk to you for a minute. Wives, your temptation is going to be to deprive your husband of sex, whether that is for legitimate or illegitimate reasons. Now, before the crowd goes out to crucify me, obviously a husband should not violently force himself upon his wife. Okay? Obviously, that is not what we are saying when we are saying don't deprive your husband. We're not talking about a husband violently forcing himself on his wife. That is illegal. That is sinful. It ought to be dealt with both from a judicial standpoint and from a pastoral standpoint. Clearly. But I have to lay that out so blatantly, clearly, because otherwise the crowd, and they still will, by the way. I can say that till I'm blue in the face, and people will still say, oh, so because a wife doesn't want to have it tonight, you're saying that she's horrible and a husband has a right. No. Now, I'm dealing with sin issues here. I'm talking about your sin, what you're tempted to do. Wives, you will be tempted to deprive your husband for either legitimate or illegitimate reasons. And just as that 1 Corinthians verse 7, or 7 verse 14 or 4, or whatever I said it was earlier, your husband has a right to your body and you have the right to his. When your spouse is interested sexually and it's an appropriate time, you know what, you should have sex. One duty is that a wife should make it her goal, whenever reasonably possible at least, and her husband is interested. Okay, wives, make it a goal that, if it's reasonably possible, okay, obviously we're not talking when it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon and the kids are jumping around and there's no quiet time or privacy, obviously not, but whenever it's reasonably possible and your husband's interested, go for it. Husbands, here you go. As a podcast geared towards men, for men, by a man, I'm more comfortable talking about this. However, let it be known, I will still address women because there are women who listen to this podcast. And as a, as men, as we lead our families, you know, men, you may need to take up some conversations with your wife. I hope this podcast helps you in your marriage. That's why I'm making this season. Obviously, there's a tone of voice to use. There's a time, there's a place. So don't be saying, well, because of resilient masculinity, they said this. No, clearly, like, be reasonable. Okay, but husbands, now it's your turn. Communicate. Take the lead in conversations. Actually talk to your wife about sex. What are your concerns? What are you thinking about sex? Be brutally honest, be open, be vulnerable, and I hate that word, be vulnerable. Your wife can't read your mind, and you can't read hers. And because this is such a deep, intimate relation. There's so much to unpack there. And husbands, it's your job as the leader in the household to lead in those conversations. Okay, in our local area, we're a military town. There are a lot of women who are in uniform. And I actually work on the military base. So for me, it's, you know, it's something I see a lot just in general. I see men and women in uniform. And a conversation we've had between my wife and I, not a very long conversation, but it took place. And it was just really quick. I was like, look, you know, uniforms look good on people, but I do not expect my wife to hold herself to the same grooming standards of a military person. She's not in the service. We're not in the service. And she ought not be concerned with the vanity of other women. She ought not be pressured by the vanity of other women. Because she's my wife and I love her and I have eyes for her only. Think through conversations, think through your concerns, think through potential problems, think through it through a Christian perspective on a regular basis. Because men, we have different temptations than our wives. Wives, we have different temptations than you, and you have different ones than we do. Okay, wives, your temptations are probably going to be more inward insecurities. That's why I talked to my wife about more stuff about looks and physical attractiveness, because I understand her temptation is going to be her temptation to be critical of herself is going to be from inward insecurities. And as a husband, my job is to lead that conversation and head that up before it gets to a point that it's a stumbling block for her. So husbands, you are expected to set the tone in delighting in your wife and telling her against the lies of the culture. Okay, this is what I do with my wife. And this is what you ought to do with your wife. Say, I want you. I'm delighted in you. That my wife does not look like the way she did when she was younger. Okay? Because it's glorious. It's a glory that both of us are going to age together. It's glorious that, you know, we're going to, Lord willing, have children. And she's not going to look the same 30 years from now than she did when we got married. And it says something meaningful. It talks about the meaningfulness of our covenant faithfulness to one another. And it says something glorious about the purpose of our marriage. Which, it isn't just sex for the sake of pleasure, although there is that too. Sex is for the sake of pleasure and fruitfulness. So our bodies, as we age, are actually preaching about covenant faithfulness. Husbands, you ought to learn how to actually outwardly and verbally delight in your wife's body in front of them. Wives, it is equally important to be sexually responsive. Okay, some of what the porn industry gets about how God made people, they actually get right, is that we're both visual and verbal sexually. I think the way Christians have introduced shame into this is that we don't want to admit that to each other. So we don't want to play into that, into the marriage bed. The porn industry got it right. We're both visually and verbally wired sexually. What does a husband like to communicate to his wife during sex? What does a wife like to communicate during sex? Do they even do so? Part of what the man needs to do is cultivate the ability to verbally delight in his wife. And a wife needs to cultivate the ability to be responsive. Wives, here is a challenge for you. And I'm going to give this to the wives because men, we do this very easily. And again, we are visual creatures. So wives, fantasize about your husband this week. It becomes much easier in the bedroom to tap into the way God made you sexually. Sex is a skill set. The wedding night is good, but it isn't the best, okay? As you grow and mature, it really will get better. Okay, the most important practical thing you can do today, husbands, is to take the initiative in leading the conversations around this. So, lead your conversations with your wife. Let's talk about the marriage bed. Let's talk about intimacy. Let's talk about what needs to improve. And men, be brave and be explicit. Say, this would really serve me if you blank. Or ask your wife what she needs more of. I'm not going to get more explicit here, but husbands and wives, you ought to be very specific and explicit in your conversations. Not in a demanding way, but in a way to serve each other in love. Send each other texts throughout the day. And give yourself an assignment to send at least one flirty text this week. Both husbands and wives. Send one good flirty text this week. See if that helps. Husbands. I'm going to talk about some painfully obvious things, but they need to be said. Okay? Men, we are made for strength and vigilance. One of the duties of a husband is to study and learn his wife. Okay, husbands, you have the duty for providing an environment where sexual love can flourish for your wife. One of the reasons Paul says that a man who fails to provide for his family, denies the faith, and is worse than an unbeliever is because a husband failing to provide in this manner is similar to a woman failing to something like sexual availability. Part of that. Okay. Husbands, because we have a duty to our wives, you ought to take it seriously. And wives, because you have a duty to your husband, you ought to take this seriously. Obviously, women will be more sexually primed during her time of ovulation, so enjoy. A husband who fails to provide that which a wife needs not only fails in his duty, but might even be complicit in her failing to fulfill her duties. If you want a good sexual environment, think, have I provided enough to where my wife can grocery shop in a way that's not full of stress? Because guess what? Stress is an intimacy killer. And I get it. Times are tough. I'm not going to say that, you know, everything's sunshine, roses, and you know, puppy dog tails out here. But men, have you provided in a way, or at least are you secure enough in a way that your wife isn't stressed all the time? Because your wife will not want to enjoy the marriage bed if she's stressed because there's no food on the table, the roof is leaking, and your car got repoed. We have duties. So men, provide. Women, be available. Sorry, husbands and wives, my bad, not men and women. Husbands, provide for your family. Wives, be available for your husband. Because we both have work to create an environment where sexual love can flourish. Some other things that can help boost your marriage bed is to be hard to be offended. Okay? If you're easy to offend, no sex is happening. Okay? If you snip at your husband because he said something and you got offended, guess what? Sex probably isn't happening that night. Husbands, if you get upset because your wife, quote, nags you about a chore for only the third time this week, okay? It wasn't even that bad. Sex probably isn't going to happen. Okay, when you two are butting heads, it's not going to happen. So be hard to offend. Cover over love. Sorry, cover over offenses with love. I think that's 1 Peter 4:8. And here's one. Here's a good one for both of us, both husbands and wives. Proverbs 3:27. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due. When it is in your power to act. Ooh, that's a good one, huh? Make Proverbs 5:15 your life goal, okay? Practically, that means wives, your breasts gotta be available for your husband. And husbands, outwardly, explicitly, praise that which God made beautiful and glorious. One of the ditches, that we can fall into is a barter economy. Oh, if I do the dishes, maybe I'll get some tonight. Or if he takes me shopping to Target, I'll get what I want, and he can get what he wants. All that really is doing is degrading your marriage bed, and ultimately, it makes your spouse to be a prostitute. He said it is exchanging something of value, whether chores, or shopping, or that new car, or a vacation, or a football game, for sex. That is, of course, not only sinful, but it is a direct inversion of our Christian duty. Just as Christ gave himself, so we give ourselves to each other freely, in service, and in love. Set up your day so it's very normal for you to have sex. Send flirty texts. Wives, wear a set of cute pajamas. Think about things. Like, just find ways to make it more open and available for both of you. When talking about sex, what makes a home productive is the difference between husband and wife. Because there is a need for both soft and hard, both literally for sex, but also for husbands and wives. Husbands must work hard to provide protection, to work hard for the provision of the household. And wives, you must be nurturing, soft for nurturing children, providing comfort and sexual responsiveness. A husband is forced on his wife, on winning his wife. I'm sorry, I read that wrong. Pardon me. A husband is focused on his wife, on winning his wife, and conquering his wife. He wants to give her pleasure, and he actually wants to know that he has given her pleasure. And women, that is way more important to him than just mere nerve endings. Okay? That's That is a huge part of our satisfaction, is knowing that we have satisfied our wives. It is good for the husband to communicate with his wife that she has permission to take a little longer if needed, to be more vocal, or showing that she enjoys him and he is winning her. Husbands, you need to be thinking about providing an environment where sexual love can flourish. Outwardly, verbally, physically, communicate often that you delight in your wife and pursue her. Wives, seek to give soft, warm responsiveness. Cultivate your sexual self towards your husband. Be responsive to him. He wants to hear, and he wants to know. Be harder to offend, and be more available. Thank you for listening to this episode. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Resilient Masculinity Podcast. Until next time, fight the good fight of faith, act like men, be strong, become the resilient, capable, godly man God has called you to be.